Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. As we head into the fifth year of California's historic drought, people are bracing themselves for an unpredictable El Niño season. Even though the ground is parched, when the rains come, they will simply flood the area and flow right into the ocean. California's water woes are partly natural and partly man-made, and that is the case in many parts of the world. But now, as some communities are returning to traditional ways of water management, older technologies are being shared. One of the internationally recognized figures who has learned much about water management is my guest, Rajendra Singh, known to many as the Waterman of India. Rajendra Singh is the winner of the Stockholm Water Prize in 2015. He's also won the Ramon Magsaysay Award for Community Leadership and heads a non-governmental organization in northern India called Tarun Bharat Sangh. He now joins me. Welcome to Uprising, Rajendra.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, your story is so fascinating, and I want to ask you specifically about the methods of water management that you have revived. But first, if you can share with us how your own journey has been to where you are today. You started out, I understand, as a medic, wanting to help rural Indians, but realized that one of their greatest challenges was access to fresh water.
Yes. You know, I'm working with the government of India in Jaipur, and I resigned in 85 and I moved to the rural area where the disaster, no water, the drought is very high. So the people is displaced to the cities, just the old people and children living there. And one old man teach me, yes, we not need your education, we not need your medicine, we need water. So I learned from my community, the indigenous knowledge system exists there. So he teach me, and I catching the clouds and putting the underground aquifer and aquifer recharge. And when the aquifer recharge, the water come in the wells. And when the water come in the well, so agriculture start. And later, long time after, the river is flowing. The first time the Arvari River is flowing. Now I can say in the seven river is flowing. River called Arvari, Ruparel, Sarsa, Bhagani, Jahajwali, Sabi, or Maheshwara. So now more than 8,600 square kilometer area. When before is under the scarcity of water and people is displaced, now there is the green tea and water, and the people is very much happy with green tea. And that time when I start the work, that time is the very much red heat there. So red heat not allowing the clouds can give the rains to us. And now they are the green heat. So now green heat, the clouds come and very good rains is coming every year. So this is the changing in my area in Rajasthan.
So can you explain, let's talk about that. You said getting water from the clouds. This is something that might sound, you know, kind of mysterious to our audience. And of course, what it is it's a method of rainwater harvesting. How does that work if you can explain to our audience, how does it work to, you know, in areas particularly that are deserts, and this will be really interesting for California, how do you harvest water?
You know, when the rains is coming and the all water going with the soil and dust, and the erosion is very high, so all water flowing and like flush flood going in the ocean. So when I start the work, first we explore the place where that water can go in the subsurface aquifer, because we are not control the erosion, and we are interested in the control the evaporation loss. So the two main threat for front of me, the one hand control the erosion and other hand control the evaporation loss. So when the clouds come and catch the rains and putting the subsurface underground aquifers, and that water fulfill the underground aquifers, and the water level come up and the water is there. So the important thing is, you know, the agroecological climatic zone diversity. So in my area is the horizontal fracture and vertical fracture in this subsurface aquifer and underground aquifer. So when we are catching the clouds and putting the aquifer, so no evaporation loss. So my water level come up and the overdraft area is rejuvenate. So the simple way, where the gentle slopes, we are creating the concave water harvesting structure on the after the understanding of the character of aquifer and the flow of the water in the aquifer. And if the gentle slopes, we make a simple direct structures, and where the steep slopes, we make a convex design of the structures. So where the natural depression, we create the concave water body. Where the gentle slopes, we create the gentle, simple straight water bodies. And where the steep slopes, so we make on the contour on the convex design of the water body.
So then, just to summarize, essentially what you're doing is you are readjusting the surface level geology of the land to capture water and allow it to absorb back into the earth and replenish aquifers, instead of it simply flowing in back into the ocean. Is that the sort of simple way of putting it?
Oh yes. Huh. You are putting very well. So this is a very simple, when you are catching the clouds and putting the underground aquifer, so your erosion is controlled and your aquifer is recharged, and that water give the need for the nature or for the human. So that water fulfill our need of human and need of nature. So the greenery is increased. So
due
to greenery increase, so green heat coming and red heat going.
What do you mean by green heat and red heat? I mean, so when the land is greener, what does that mean? How does it change the weather?
The red heat is where the barren hills and the barren area and the barren sand. So the sun rays coming and back to the
so the sun's rays are reflected in different ways depending upon whether it's a green area or a dry desert.
Yes, and where the building of the glasses and the building of the cement concrete, so they are also creating the red heat.
Right. How do you? I mean, you're in Southern California, where we have paved our river. We've literally created a concrete basin for the Los Angeles River, and we have for decades been borrowing water from other places and now have this horrific drought. I mean, how do you respond to how Los Angeles has treated its river?
Sonali, you understand, when I came in America, so I feel that America is a real developed country. They are on the list called developed country. But when I walk in the Owens Valley and I seen the Owens Lake,
Owens Valley,
so I feel real very much threatening. So this is not a developed way, and we can't say this is the developed country. This is a real disaster with the nature. You know, the Owens Valley whole all barren. Before, during my walk in the Owens Valley, I seen more than 7 water bodies, the old traditional water bodies, when the indigenous people living there, so their time created that water body. But the all water bodies now full with the silting. And when we are reaching in the end of my journey and my walk at the Owens Lake, so the Owens Lake is the in the hub of the dust. The whole lake is silted and no water there. And the government doing and the control of the dust and the cleaning and the maintain of the cleaning air, the name of the maintaining the cleaning air. They are creating the roads in the lakes, and they are creating the blocks in the lakes, and no focus on the greenery, no focus of the control the dust with greenery, but just only creating the physical structures there. So I am really very sad, and I see, no, this is not the way of the controlling the dust and making the clean air. This is the real, in the future, creating a disaster. So I feel after this, my walk, little bad. A bad impression.
So you went to Owens Valley and got a bad impression of the United States. So how can we apply the work that you have done in India to other parts of the world, in California, elsewhere as well? Is it a matter of replacing the surfaces that we cover with something more porous?
I'm saying what I'm doing in the semi-desert or desert area of India, that is on the same way we can replicate in the California, in the Southern California, because the Aravalli Hills in India, you know, the same character of the hills is here, and the rainfall is more than four times from my area. In my area is hardly 10 centimeter, or you can say 100 mm rainfall.
So we have more rainfall here?
You have the more rainfall in that area. So we can say your rains is not erratic rains. Here is the rains is hardly the highest erratic rain is in the 1 hour in the 6 inch. But you know, in India, in my area, when the clouds come, so within the 2, 3, or 4 years before, the 9 inch coming in the 1 hour, the whole 9 inch can come in the one hour. So this is the real character of the erratic character of the rains, and here is the character of the rains is very good.
It's more predictable and more spread out.
Yes, more predictable and more spread out. So here we can create the water harvesting structures and catch the waters on the foothills and hills and the valley, and when they catch the water, the greenery coming up because the soil moisture increase, and when the greenery come up, so that erosion controlled by the greenery. If the we can control the erosion by greenery, so you know, this is really a very good impact of the weather and climate and the global warming. And you know, the global warming and climate change is always government saying this is the global problem. But you know, the solution is start with local. If we can really exploring the solution of the climate change and global warming, so we can start the green heat here in the California Southern Valley. And one hand, they increase the greenery here, and other hand, the more water is available for the Los Angeles. But now they are not doing on that line. They are doing only on the physical structures. They are the focus of this area. So when you're focused on the physical structures, not the green structures, not the green technology, so you are doing the work against the climate change and global warming and against the water and against the flow. You know, the drought and flood is the simple two side of the one coin. If we can catch the water on the foothill and increase the greenery, so we control the drought, and we also control the flood. The water is not coming like flash flood and coming creating the flood.
So you can prevent flash floods, yeah.
Yes. So you know, if we can create the flow is slow, so we can control the drought and flood both. So now the disaster of the drought, this is the man-made disaster. If we can try and we can start the work for the controlling the man-made disaster, and we can change into the green tea, and we can call the clouds with the green tea, so we can make change here in same what we can we make a change in India, Indian semi-desert or desert area. The same we can reapplicate here. Yes, you know, some diversity of the agroecological climatic zone diversity. So some changes needed in the technology of the water conservation and some engineering. But the principle we can follow same from India and the Southern California.
Now, how have these principles been applied in other countries? Because not everybody has the same problems. Isn't it important, of course, to tailor the solutions to the very unique problems facing other places?
Yes, you know, these problem is now, we can say, the world over. And who is the powerful? The powerful means the government is always thinking about the extraction technology, what they have in the underground aquifer. So they are giving the, first they are giving the extraction technology and engineering, and they are exploit the underground aquifers. When your underground aquifer is overdraft and completely empty, so they are thinking, oh yes, we can capture some rains. And what they are doing, they're creating the dams, aqueducts, and without thinking about the on the character of the earth or ecology, they are creating the aqueduct. And the traditional flow is disturbed. And due to the traditional flow is disturbing, so we are disturbing, oh yes, no water now here. So we are the powerful, we can't sufficient water of the Ons River, not giving to the Los Angeles. So we can take the water in the Colorado, and we can take the water in other rivers where the nearby. So the powerful people always thinking, taking the water from the other area, but never thinking the own water. You know how much rain is coming in Los Angeles, and they can start the rainwater harvesting in the Los Angeles city. So they not how much money they are spending now in the structure of the creating the roads and blocks in the Ons River. That money, if they can put the rooftop harvesting and water harvesting in the Los Angeles, so that water is not going to the ocean. So the, much of the water going to the ocean. Now in my area, we are completely 100% water putting in the subsurface aquifer, and that water slow flow going in the down. So the upper region get the pupil water, and the lower region also get the water pupil there. Well, in the same principle, where the people living in the higher area, so they capture the water there, and that need of that people, they can fulfill with that water, and who is living in the downstream, so that flow.
So when you slow the flow of water, people both upstream and downstream can benefit from it.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Rajendra, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the fact that there are forces in this world that couldn't care less about the access of ordinary people to drinking water, to fresh water. And I'm talking about, of course, corporations like Nestle that are very eager to privatize water, that see rainwater harvesting as dangerous to their profits. How serious is the issue of water privatization?
You know, the privatization of the water is really, I can say, three words. Creating the encroachment of the water bodies, and they are changing the ownership of the water, and they are really polluting the water, and the privatization of the water, they are creating the pollution also. So the three big threats about due to the privatization. First is encroachment on water, and encroachment also on the water body and the land of the water body. You know that every river have the three type of the land: blue land, green land, and red land. So when the companies and corporation taking the right on the water and taking the right on the lease or on the water, so they are also taking the land. The water and land ownership, the joint, so they are controlling the land, encroaching the land also. And the second is pollution. The every big company, they are not really bother about the clean flow in the river. They are taking the water and they are making the bottled water, and they are creating the new water market, and that water market really creating the pollution. And third, the extraction of the water.
The extraction of water.
Yes. So extraction, pollution, and encroachment. Three big threats now coming from the privatization of the water. And these three threats creating a tension between the poor people and richer people, because the richer people can purchase the bottled water, but the poor people can't purchase that water bottle. So the tension is coming, and these tension now moving to the war, the world water war. You know,
world
this is
water
the world war. The third war is for the water.
Yeah.
So these all conflict and tensions moving to the world water war. So this is a big threat in this century. The privatization is just there. Sometime the Nestle or Coca-Cola or Pepsi or Vivendi, these lot of company in this globe who is interested in the privatization of the water, they are saying, oh yes, we are doing reform for water. We are giving the clean water. We are giving the safe water. So we are creating the real reform in the water. But you know, that reform, that is not a reform. This is a real changing the ownership of water. They are the changing the community's water in the privatized water. So now in this globe, if we can give the drinking water for everybody, no need of the privatization. The need is the communitization of the water. If we can give the owners the save the community water right, so we can ensure the water right to everyone. The water right of the tree, water right of the river, water right of the nature, and water right of the human. So now the need of the ensuring the natural water right, the water right of the nature, and water right of the river, and water right of the poorest of the poor human. So if we are not ensuring that water right, so this is the war is coming in our gate.
What are your plans for the future? You have done a lot of successful work in India. What's next for you?
Now we are thinking this success and time-tested success and experience we can replicate globally, and the world water war we can change into peace. You know, the Tamera is a peace center in the Portugal, and this type of the Oja, today I am in the Ojai Hill. So this type of the peace center in the world who is have the belief and trust in the nature and nature right, we are all joining them, and we are start a world water walk for peace. This world water walk of peace going to the in 1 year in the every country and every continent. And the next year we are start the dialogue with the national government and the state government and local government. And after that, in 2017, we are going and meeting in Geneva, and we ensure in this world water war we can change into peace, and the community water right and the nature right and river right, we can try ensuring this. So this world water walk for peace is going on now, and this walk is every country is in this year is starting this walk.
Well, Rajendra, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and best of luck to you with all your work.
Thank you, Sonali. Thank you.
I've been speaking with Rajendra Singh, winner of the Stockholm Water Prize in 2015. He also won the Ramon Magsaysay Award for Community Leadership and heads a non-governmental organization in northern India called Tarun Bharat Sangh. He is an acclaimed global water rights activist.